Buenas tardes a todos los presentes.
Good afternoon to everyone, to all the participants. You're all most welcome to topic 7. Called the Internet, the International Outlook, the role for WIPO. Now, before beginning with this panel, I would like to congratulate the World Intellectual Property Organization, WIPO, for the organization of this meeting, for the agenda, for the themes, and because of the way they have set it out so that we could exchange opinions on this topic. I would also like to congratulate all the experts who have taken the floor before this panel for their extraordinary submissions. And I would like to congratulate you, all of you, all the people present here for your wonderful questions and for your very, very specific and wise comments. I don't know whom I've learned more from, the experts or from your questions and your interventions. And thank you very much. First of all, I would like to introduce the people sitting at the rostrum here. I have Mrs. Dora Salamba Makingwa, who's the Chief Executive Officer of the Copyright Society of Malawi, COSOMA, who has a master's in intellectual property and of the Franklin Pierce Law Center and also copyright. And we also have the presence of Mrs. Jane Dybal, Senior Vice President, Warner Chapel Music Limited, London, who has been the General Counselor for Government and several legal reforms representing the members of the musical editors. Very welcome, Madam. And then we also have, to my left, Mr. Phil Hardy, the editor and from the Prospect to Outlook of Limits, and he's a newspaper person, a journalist, and author of several articles on intellectual property. He's also been involved with the movie sector. Welcome. And also to my left, we have Mr. Bendik Hofset, Chairman, International Council of Authors and Composers of Music, CM, and he's also a composer. He's a singer, saxophone player. Welcome. As you know, as is customary here at the rostrum, we have 10 minutes each for each and every one of your interventions. So your synthetic powers have to be even more than they have been, more visible than they've been in other interventions. We'll begin with the ladies, with Mrs. Dora Salamba Makiwima. You have the floor first, madam. Thank you.
Thank you very much, moderator. First of all, allow me to extend or to express my sincere gratitude to WIPO for inviting me to say something on this very important topic on the role of WIPO, and also, of course, for ensuring that at least there's some gender balance in this panel. Initially, I think my colleague Jen was saying that this is the first panel since yesterday that we have two women speaking. Thank you very much for that. And let me start by saying that since yesterday, we've been talking about the licensing issues and the imaging issues as we have seen them in the digital environment. But then, what has been or what should be the role for WIPO in all this? First of all, I would like to draw your attention back to the 1996, when the world saw the conclusion of the two WIPO treaties in Geneva, here, the WIPO Copyright Treaty, and of course the WIPO performances and phonograms treaty. And these treaties were meant or are meant to protect creative works in the digital environment and, of course, to address the challenges posed by the digital technologies, mainly with the dissemination of protected material over the Internet, and are therefore referred to as the Internet treaties. And besides, they are intended to ensure that rights holders can effectively use technology to protect their rights and to license their works in the digital environment. And therefore, they require member states to provide adequate legal protection and effective remedies against circumvention of technological measures used by rights holders to protect their rights. And further, they also ensure that member states prohibit the deliberate alteration of the electronic rights management information. However, we see that progress in monitoring implementation of the WCT as well as the WPPT by WIPO has been slow in this regard. And as you can see, very few countries so far, especially in the developing world or developing countries, have ratified the two treaties. And in addition, WIPO has not so far demonstrated how effective implementation of the two treaties can contribute to access to knowledge in the digital environment and how they can facilitate online licensing of copyright works. So in this regard, we need WIPO to undertake activities that are aimed at assessing the implementation of these treaties in its member states in order to deal or to effectively deal with the social, cultural, and economic issues affecting its members. From the assessment exercise, we believe that WIPO would then develop guidelines that would assist member states, especially in developing and less developed countries, to successfully implement the two treaties. Over and above, WIPO should continue to provide the legal and technical assistance to developing and less developed countries in reviewing their domestic laws and to ensure that the requirements under the two treaties are incorporated therein. What is more important, again, is the fact that in the area of collective management, where I come from, the International Confederation of Societies of Composers and Authors developed what we call the Common Information System tools, the CIS tools, in response to the challenges of digital technology and the Internet. The objective of CIS tools is to administer rights across digital superhighways so that collective management organizations can share information about musical works. And to this end, there are specific databases that are used for identification of authors and their works, which are referred to as interested parties information and works international databases, respectively. So these tools, apart from establishing a global documentation and distribution network, by providing a possibility of online registration of works, are also forms of technological protection measures which necessitate online licensing of copyright works. And for example, using the same principle of CIS, five big societies, SACEM, GEMA, the society in Italy and USA, established a fast-track alliance, a system in which the existing computing resources and databases of the five collecting societies are connected in a decentralized but harmonized structure with the idea of rights identification and online licensing of copyright works. And these tools have been effectively and constantly used by the developed societies, resulting in growth in e-commerce. So what we think is that although WIPO itself is not a licensing agency, but there is at least a critical role that it can play. For example, in conjunction with its partners in the field of collective management, it can take a leading role in establishing international standards, tools, and formats that are accepted by governments and stakeholders in developing countries for identification of rights owners in the framework of international copyright structure. This, we believe, would then facilitate a good licensing system. And in this regard, WIPO should carry out a comparative analysis of the rights management tools available for rights identification and licensing of works. Moreover, WIPO has developed a digital collective management tool named WIPO Course, which is made available to collective management organizations, particularly in developing countries or LDCs, free of charge. The tool is mainly used for documentation of members' works and members themselves and distribution of royalties. But we believe that maybe initiative should be there by WIPO to at least extend the development of WIPO course to cover licensing modules that would enable member states to also use the same software for traditional as well as online licensing of works. And we have also been talking of the fact that sometimes copyright, or in general, copyright also conflict with competition laws. And in this regard, in line with the WIPO development agenda, we think that WIPO should put a system that would facilitate identification of digital licensing, particularly in view of the conflict that is there between copyright licensing and competition law. It is therefore an imperative that WIPO undertakes a study on copyright licensing and competition rules and practices by examining the legal frameworks and policies and licensing practices of some member states, particularly in developing countries. And from the study, WIPO would then be required to formulate recommendations that would assist member states to develop pro-competition licensing systems. It would also be, it would ensure that member states are provided with expert advice on the alignment of domestic laws to competition policies. And then we also think WIPO should undertake a critical analysis of the different licensing models. That is to say, there's need to collect facts on different models of licensing, traditional forms in relation to emerging ones, for example, Creative Commons and open source, which are getting wider acceptance in developing countries, and find ways of how these can be embraced in the digital environment. And WIPO needs to develop guidelines that would assist member states to identify the best practice in licensing within various jurisdictions. And as it was already stipulated earlier on, it's also important to make people aware of these issues, especially that we have several licensing models in place these days. So in this regard, we believe national or regional seminars would be very pertinent in this. And of course, finally, an important point has already also been mentioned, that we need, WIPO should at least devote its resources as well to providing technical assistance in establishing collective management organizations which are pertinent in licensing of works in countries where these do not exist. Thank you. I'm done. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Dora, for your intervention. I would like to ask you further on, why do you consider that some countries have not ratified the WCT and WPPT? But I'll ask you this later on. Further down the road, I'll ask you that question. And now I would like to give the floor to Mrs. Jane Dybal, Senior Vice President, Warner Chapel Music Limited, London. You have the floor, madam, if you could be so kind as to take the floor.
Thank you very much. I too would like to thank WIPO for this event and for inviting me to speak here. I'd particularly like to thank the audience. I think for everyone to still be here at 4:45 on a Friday afternoon shows a dedication to copyright, which is laudable. I've seen the subject matter of this panel as an open invitation to ask for things. I'm not sure whether that was the intention, but that's the line of argument that I'm pursuing. But first, I just wanted to explain to those of you who don't know what a music publisher does, what our role is in the food chain. Our publisher owns songs. We develop and sign and develop writers, some of whom write and sing their own songs as recording artists. And at Warner Chappell in the UK, we've signed, for example, Amy MacDonald and Paolo Nattini and Dido, all of whom were signed to us before they had a record deal. So it's not necessarily a record company that launches an artist onto the stage. Some of our writers write for other people and don't sing themselves, or at least not in public. But we make no products. We don't manufacture anything. In the old days, we used to make sheet music. We don't even do that anymore. We farm that out to sheet music specialists. So our only business is licensing. We're completely dependent on other people using songs for us to generate revenues to reinvest. And sometimes we license directly ourselves, and sometimes we license through collection societies for collective rights management. So I think it's important to see what our business needs to thrive in order to work out what assistance we need from WIPO. What we need is a licensing landscape which encourages both national and multinational licenses. We like to license both nationally and internationally. We need collection societies which are efficient, fair and transparent. We need to have users who want to pay a fair rate to use our songs. And we need a legislative background which supports copyright. But before asking for help, I think it's important to show that we are trying to help ourselves in various ways. We've reorganized how we administer digital rights, and by doing that, I think have got a better service which we can offer to digital rights companies, and we're able to secure more successful relationship with collection societies in terms of ensuring transparency and efficiency on that type of licensing. We do offer at Warner Chappell either national licenses for digital companies that still want to get licenses on a blanket basis for the national territory, and we offer multi-territory licenses. We actively engage with the digital community. In the old days, we didn't used to really meet with digital companies because the collection societies would be the access point through which digital companies acquired our rights. And now we're much more in the forefront of that, which is hugely exciting when you see some of the new business models come to market. And consequently, we work very closely with them to create new business opportunities in this ever-changing world, especially as we become less reliant on record sales or income from record sales, which has been hit so badly by piracy. So in helping ourselves, we've relaunched the International Confederation of Music Publishers, and I'm here as a board member of ICMP. We've developed active partnerships with other content industries such as the film industry, the record industry, book publishing industry. We try to work very hard in supporting developing markets. Every year ICMP runs a publishing conference for music publishers in Eastern Europe and try and assist those developing markets in creating business models that work for themselves. And next week there's another session in the United Arab Emirates, where I couldn't agree more with Mr. de Sumont earlier on, who talked about the importance of setting up a collection society in the Gulf. That's something that we two are focused on. We've secured various industry agreements between us and, for example, JSAC, which is an organization of collection societies, and we've supported and developed education programs in schools. So, what do we need from WIPO? I think what we need WIPO to do, and I was very impressed with what Dora had to say. I completely support and endorse what she had to say. We need best practice guidelines, I think, throughout the world for copyright education, for copyright enforcement, for support against copyright theft, I've put here. Piracy, I think is a strange word, because I think for some people it's quite an appealing word to be considered a pirate. There's something that appeals into the rebel amongst us to be considered pirates. And I think that we have to marry the idea that this is copyright theft, while at the same time trying to acknowledge that for certain types of use, we should maybe be a bit more free and easy with access to our copyrights. In developing markets, we're very keen to work closely with WIPO in developing markets. Warner Chappell is a global company, and I myself have been to territories like the Philippines and India to try and work out how we can assist the market there. And it would be great to go hand in hand with WIPO. And one of my colleagues at Warner Chappell, I know, is attending the China conference. Other thing that I think we need, and the last thing that I think we need help from WIPO on, is a global repertoire database. Now, I'd planned that this was going to be a big reveal at the end of this session, but it seems to me that I don't think I've spoken about anything much other than a global repertoire database over these past 2 days. So, and Francis Gurry himself started with a reference to it. The idea, I think, to be specific, is that there is one source of truth for data which relates to musical works throughout the world. And this has been considered for many years, in fact, but was most recently harnessed by a roundtable which was created out of the European Commission. It's essential for both old and new markets, and it's particularly essential for music publishing, musical composition rights, so music publishing, collection society rights, to enable digital service providers to identify repertoire. And for us, as publishers, we're still in the situation where we are amending registrations in just about every country in the world. So if there's a correction to a song split, we are having to do that multiple times. If we had a global repertoire database, it would provide a universal source of truth that would then send information out. Warner Chappell was originally excluded from the process of consultation that came out of the European Commission, but I found out through making a nuisance of myself, I think is the word for it, that it is an open access process and administered through a company called Rights.com. So I would urge you all to participate in that and to check into it. It's a company called Rights.com, which is if you Google them, I'm sure you will find them. Originally, I thought I'd be here saying to WIPO, please can you fund this, or please can you make it happen, or please can you contribute dispute resolution procedures. I could go on. But I think the important thing is that it has to be supported by WIPO. In fact, it has to be supported by the European Commission, and it has to be supported by everyone here if it's going to happen. There's no room for ego in this. There's no room for ego, whether individual, corporate, or organisational. We must be careful not to be over-ambitious. And I think that we, only by concentrating on what Francis Gurry has referred to as the public good, can we make it happen. So one thing I do know based on past experience is if we don't use this opportunity to make it happen, it will be a long time before we're able to do it again. We've known before that we're so dependent on IT that when we fail with IT initiatives, it tends to put us off having another go for quite a long time. So I would urge you all to get involved, to find out about it, and to try and support this process. And I ask particularly for WIPO's help in making it happen. Thank you.
Muchas gracias a la señora.
Thank you very much, Jane Dybal. And later I'll ask about the databases for the global repertoire. But right now I'd like to give the floor to Mr. Phil Hardy.
editor of Perspective Limits.
Hi. Like everyone, I'd like to thank WIPO for inviting us here and giving us the time, and for you still appearing. If this was an academic conference, I think I'd call my remarks Global Repertoire Database, Some Questions Concerning the Documentation and Administration of Copyright in the (online) world on a pan-European / global basis. So obviously I'm going to talk about the Global Repertoire Database in a little bit more detail. But essentially what we have to look at is the past problems, the present difficulties, and a possible future. The first panelist noted that you know there is CSNET, and one could add to this that there is IRSC and other databases, but they're mostly limited. For licensing to proceed in a smoother and more transparent form, what one needs is access to the documentation by the user and easily. And past databases have been owned. I mean, there are some databases that are commercially owned, and people offer to track rights for rights holders and their usage and so forth. But they're always limited, and they've always failed. I mean, the saga of the Common Information System. We're talking about something that's runs for 8 years, and it's still not terribly satisfactory. And I've written about this in some detail elsewhere. And if you want to catch up on all that thing, if you go to my website, which is www.theviewfromtheboundary.com, and search for Christiansand, there's some various free documents that detail that. Or alternatively, if anyone after this event sees me, I've got some of the documents on a USB. Right, so the latest, and I once should stress it is the latest, and you know, our call has been the Common Framework for Online Rights Management's Global Repertoire Database Request for Proposals, which was made by the EU, and they established a working party, and they identified in rather more precise detail than had been previously identified what the database should do. And I just go through it quite quickly. All known copyright musical works, including arrangements of public domain works, the writers of each musical work, the owners of the rights shares attributed to each party for such copyright musical work on a territory-by-territory basis, the entity on behalf of those owners that is authorised to grant licences on a territory-by-territory basis, whether on an exclusive or non-exclusive basis, and whether an offline or online exploitation by right share, right type, e.g. public performance, reproduction, etc., by use type, e.g. online or offline by territory. All known sound recordings and music video data, including the name of the main artist, the links between each musical work and all sound recordings on music videos on which it appears. These criteria are detailed much more and precisely, of course, in the request for proposals, which is available on the Commission's website. Right. Well, when the working party got going and started to see that there was some value in this, and the Commission saw that there was some value in it, you then, of course, reached the point of how to create it. And the request for proposals makes one thing very clear, that the EU is not in a position to provide funding for the development and the ongoing management of the Global Repertoire Database. It adds further, upon completion of the evaluation process of the GRD, the working group will be recommending one or more solution providers for the delivery of the GRD and will publish a proposal to address its future governance, financing, ownership and access to data. It's at this point the solution is offered, which, as Jane has made amply clear, WIPO seems to be quite interested in, that WIPO might be the solution here. Well, WIPO is global and international. The Commission, I mean, although it has embassies all over the world, is essentially European. WIPO is neutral. WIPO is transparent, as has been demonstrated by its administration of the patient things that are registered through it. WIPO has a disputes procedure in place which works quite well. There inevitably will be disputes between rights holders and users and so forth. Now, there are problems about WIPO doing this, which are to do with timing. I mean, to some extent, my understanding is that the EU will sign off on the working group saying, well done, thank you very much, and then WIPO has to somehow enter, and how that entrance takes place will be quite interesting. There are going to be enormous problems about costs. When one is writing about, as I do oftenly, write about these issues, there's a wonderful little sentence that you add in and say, there will be some technical problems. You know, you don't go into them and that sort of thing. Well, there will be. I mean, the saga of CIS is a saga of technical problem after technical problem, and also of marked reluctance, for very understandable political reasons, by various societies to not do so forth thing. So that is a very significant problem. And then there's also the problem of WIPO's stakeholders. I mean, if it's slightly easier to get the Commission together to move forward, although not to get it to fund something, because obviously this must be a global, not merely European database, I envisage there will be some problems in getting WIPO's members to actively commit quite a lot of money to something. And also, people, one has to understand, have very different notions of copyright around the world, and those notions will always remain in place. And there are different and complex licensing concerns around the world which sort of have to be solved. At the same time, leaving aside the need for someone to set up the governance administration and the registration process for such a global repertoire database, I would also think that this, to put it quite bluntly, will represent an opportunity for WIPO. I mean, WIPO receives a significant amount of its revenues from its administration of the patent database and registration process. This would do that. Finally, I mean, to put it very bluntly, who else could do it? We've seen various well-intentioned societies attempt to do it and not really fail, primarily because their interests are limited in every instance. We've seen commercial organisations do it relatively successful, but only for very specific and narrow niche areas of activity. So my request following Jane is, please, WIPO, come in the door. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Mr. Phil Hardy, for your presentation. Later on, we will speak more about the entities that offer administration services. We'll be pleased to do that. But first, I'd like to give the floor to Mr. Bendik Hovseth, president of CSAC. You have the floor.
Thank you very much. President of CSAC, I wish I was. But alas, there is another president of CSAC. I'm only the president of SIAM, which is the Authors' Council within CSAC. I'd like to echo everyone's gratitude to the audience and also to WIPO for having the chance to take the floor here. There are very few advantages being the last speaker on Friday evening. But one is that my presentation keeps getting more and more condensed. And the other thing is that I actually might find time to comment on some of the previous deliberations that have been going on here. Just since we have this confusion between CSAC and CIAM, I represent CIAM, the World Council for Authors of Musical Works, Composers, and Lyricists. And through our mother organization, CSAC, CIAM represents 2.5 million individual members worldwide in the field of music. CIAM is becoming more and more representative of the world's authors. We have stayed predominantly Western in our representation and our subject matters for too long. We have created ties to the European Composers and Songwriters Alliance in Europe, and we have been active in building up similar structures in Africa and Latin America. Although these continental divisions of authors have only been started, we already now see the importance of having networks on the grassroots level. It gives us a lot of feedback on what policies should be aimed for in different territories as well as globally. Just like to comment on licensing. We've had several debates concerning online licensing, and we keep hearing that there are 27 different regimes in Europe as of today. This is not entirely true. In the Nordic Baltic countries, we already have a multi-territorial licensing structure in place through NCB, the Nordic Copyright Bureau, where users can attain an online license for 8 countries on the basis of extended mandates given to NCB by the national collective management organizations. This is possible in our part of the world, not least because of the widespread use of extended collective license agreements. These have worked very well in our part of the world since the 1960s. But a prerequisite has been clear divisions of power between government, civil society, and prudence towards anti-competitive practices. Outside of the Nordic countries, concern has been raised over whether the mandate given to the societies by its members is compatible with the Berne Convention and its depiction of the author's moral rights. But the way we have practiced it, with the possibility of exclusion for different areas of use, it has not been more than an academic problem. I'd like to comment also on the black box monies for the developing world that we heard about earlier in the discussions. In my home society, Tono, in Norway, we found that around 100,000 euros yearly was to be distributed to non-society members. What this technical term means is that the money belonged to unknown authors from the developing world with either non-existent societies or societies with insufficient metadata structures. We were able to pool these monies up with similar funds from our other CMOs in the repographic area, neighboring rights area, and cable transmission. Then we found a donor, NORAD, that matched our investment, and we established NORCODE. NORCODE is an organization that is set up to build and sustain organizations in developing countries through the provision of infrastructure and through training administrative personnel as well as right holders. NORCODE is active today in several countries, and as far as I'm aware, it's one of the few organizations established in civil society with a development agenda. So it's possible to make fair use of those distributions. Both SIAM and NORCODE have similar agendas to that of the recent development agenda that this particular conference is attributed to, and SIAM ascribed to the recommendations made by WIPO in this area. In the online area, we have to look at the global scope. No territory will be stronger than the weakest part of the chain. We basically only need one rogue nation in order to tilt everything. This means that every nation has to become convinced to come on board, and it is our common responsibility to consult and assist in the direction of harmonized and implemented laws. In order to obtain arguments for disinformation and assessments of national creative industries, we have to have information, and we have to have extensive training programs and tools in place. I'm very happy to see that WIPO already is doing excellent work in this area, and proud to say that we are collaborating in the field of training. I'm very impressed by the reports on creative economies issued by WIPO, and they have been very helpful to authors involved in the area in order to be informed and take the right decisions on policy matters. As for technology, we again collaborate closely with WIPO. The WIPO Cost software was mentioned by Dora. It's at hand, and we utilize that in several parts of the developing world. And there are discussions about creating a global repertoire database within the premises of WIPO, as you heard from the two previous speakers. There are good arguments for this initiative from an author's perspective, if it was to work ideally, taking into account all the obstacles outlined by the distinguished Phil Hardy here. We think that it should be able to level the playing field by facilitating equal access to markets for all authors worldwide. Through more consistent data, we should be able to distribute more accurately, again benefiting authors from developing countries who today experience a loss of income based on poor or non-existing metadata. Furthermore, a GRD could be an incentive towards reducing some of the huge investment that our societies are putting into competing back offices, often duplications of each other. A GRD could also link metadata from different groups of rights holders, authors, performers, and producers, thus enabling the user to find all available versions of a piece of music with all data available on personnel. This creates attractive possibilities for the music lovers as well as the creative community. A prerequisite from our side is that such a database is set up as a reference database rather than a database aimed at direct licensing. Direct involvement in licensing from WIPO's side would, in our opinion, be a breach of their mandate. If I didn't reach my time as of now, I'd like to give a little comment to the intervention from Francis Keeling from Universal yesterday, who made me jump in my chair when describing the success of the online simulcast model and the labels being partnered and liable to artists as music providers. It seems to me that a number of factors is lacking in that vision that so shamelessly omits authors, publishers, and performers. Certainly, the mechanical model of the past cannot be the ideal recipe for solving our online licensing problems of today and the future. Surely, the successful streaming services of today have much more in common with broadcasting than selling copies over a counter. If we build our future on obsolete and controversial models of the past, we will not get anywhere. Authors do realize that we are bound together with other rights owners and rights holders. The current crisis for the recording industry affects us too, not only because we lose money, but also because we are voluntarily and contractually in this together with them. On one side, the multinational publisher or record label are inevitably pushing for critical mass and maximum return of revenue, thereby serving the agenda of monoculture through the one-size-fits-all approach to the arts. On the other hand, a good publisher and a good record label are essential to us as artists and composers. They allow us to concentrate on what we do best, to stay clear of day-to-day business decisions. They provide advice, critique, they use their professionalism and develop quality instincts. They're able to find the right business model and service for our music, thereby sustaining our careers, act as filters for consumers, and assures them that they should be willing to lend an ear to these selected musical works. Most importantly, they are willing to take the financial risk involved in making our music accessible. It is hard to see who will be the financiers of music in a democratized online environment if not these same or similar agents. That concludes my presentation. Thank you very much.
Muchas gracias.
Thank you very much, Bendik, for your comments on this theme, and I'd like to open the floor. I'd like to put some questions to our distinguished panelists. The first, for Dora, in connection with your presentation, Dora, and my question is as follows. Why are there few member states that have ratified, in particular WCT and WPPT? Why are there so few states?
Thank you very much. I think that, as I already stipulated, I think we, as coming from the developing country, we haven't seen the importance of why we should sign or ratify the two internet treaties. That's why I said maybe there's need that WIPO should undertake activities that are aimed at showing or demonstrating to the world the importance of these two treaties. Well, in theory, we know how important these treaties are, but in practice, maybe we have not seen how effective implementation of the two treaties would enable maybe a country to license its own works online and, of course, to contribute to e-commerce as it should. Yeah, possibly that's the reason why. And, of course, maybe would say that we also need to update the laws before we can even successfully implement the two treaties. And maybe the technical assistance may be what is required. We may not have the technical expertise on our own to do that, and possibly we may need assistance from elsewhere like WIPO. That's what I can say.
Muchas gracias.
Thank you very much, Dora. And we do appreciate the answer you gave. And I would like to ask Jane why you haven't set up a global repertoire database before now.
How long have you got? The fact is that the four major music publishing companies each have a global repertoire database. And on our individual global repertoire database, we can tell you which songs we publish in any territory of the world. What then happens is that information is then disseminated out to individual territories, and the global repertoire database for our own repertoire completely disintegrates at that point. I think one of the questions is, who's going to build it? And I think that probably explains why it hasn't happened before. One thing that we as publishers have tried to do is to encourage societies to work with each other in order to make it happen. And there are various reasons why societies haven't done it. I don't propose to go into them all here, but I think that for whatever reason, those attempts or initiatives haven't worked. Generally speaking, I think that the question of ownership is very is one of the most difficult questions to get over, and is the most likely reason for something to fall down, because everybody wants to own data. Everybody sees a value in owning data, and so therefore there's a reluctance to share data, because there's a perceived commercial value in the data itself. And that is something that we need to get over in order to try and build this, because whoever ends up owning it, the most important thing is that people have access to it. So I think that if we can get over the question of who's going to own it, which is really the main factor why it hasn't happened up until now, if we can get over that question, concentrate on the fact of making data publicly available, which is in itself quite difficult given data protection issues of making data publicly available. But if we can ensure that this is a real open access system, then some of those issues of ownership go away and or become less important, which hopefully means that this time around it's more likely to happen.
Muchas gracias.
Thank you very much, Jane. It's very interesting. I don't know whether one of the members of the panels would like to comment on this question. Any of the members of the panel want to comment? No?
There's one point I'd like to make, which is underlined something that Bendix said earlier, is that the point of the Global Repertoire Database is it's not a licensing database. It's not a tool for commercial activity. And the problem with previous databases is that they have at their heart commercial activities. And I think because this would not have the commercial activity element to it, I think some of the database problems that, in terms of access and public databases and so forth, would not come into play. The biggest problem, I mean, is, I think, cost and the realisation of quite what it's going to be. But it has worked before. I mean, ISBN works quite well for books. That's my end.
Thank you very much.
Phil, and since you already have the floor, I'd like to ask you to give us a comment on whether there are various offers for administrative services. I repeat the question. For Phil. It's for Phil. I'd like to hear your opinion, whether you think that there's several commercial entities who offer administrative services.
Yes, they are. They are commercial activities. They work for, you know, rights folders, things like that. They work for individual companies. They're offering their services. They're not offering a range of activities that covers the global repertoire. It's very specific. It's broken down into small things, small areas of activity. You know, they work on behalf of BMI. They work on behalf of this publisher that signed up for it. They work on and so forth. And they have the problem which the existing databases have, which is just to talk about music for a moment, the recorded music and the musical composition. I mean, it's very difficult to match them. And also, if you're only dealing with the repertoire of your client, and part of the repertoire of your client is split between several authors, composers, and possibly other publishers, you have the problem of how to match all that kind of information. You have the problem, to some extent, I think some of the societies don't quite know what repertoire has been withdrawn from them by a number of publishers who are seeking to license users directly. All those problems have, in a sense, made the commercial tracking and administration of usage of musical works limited, successful sometimes if it's a narrow stream of revenue that you're following, but not something that you can build and create a new architecture for a global area of activity.
Muchas gracias.
Thank you very much, Phil. Would you like to comment on the same idea, on Phil's idea? Would you like to dwell on it further, extend it, broaden it?
Yes, I'd just like to add that if this is set up as a registry, a neutral database, it could actually help the existing infrastructure that are in place in societies enormously without taking away any of the incentive of doing the operations that they already are doing in terms of match report distribution and other functions that does not come as a natural derivative of such a database. It would enable cleaner data for everyone, and it would enable more precise distributions. And that's not endangering, I think, any other investment that we've done within the realm of the societies.
Any other comments from the other members of the panel?
Jane?
I don't know, really. I think that I agree with Phil that it shouldn't be a licensing entity, and I think that if... it would create... There is a specific problem for songs. Songs are much more different than master recordings. They're much more difficult to administer because there are so many interested parties. If I write a song with somebody over there, they might be published by a completely different publisher. They might then bring their friend in. They might write a couple of lines of the chorus. And before you know it, you've got four writers and four publishers. And then somebody might stick a sample of somebody else's song onto it. And you notice this, there was one very famous event at the Ivor Novello Awards, which is an award for songwriters, when they gave an award to a song and 13 songwriters got up to collect it. You know, this is where this is a real problem for, and specifically to music publishing and songwriting. And I think this is... You know, ambition is great. Ambition is laudable. You know, yesterday I was drawing pictures of a licensing nirvana where everything happens and everything goes according to plan and it works like this and it's going to be fantastic. that's unrealistic. You know, that's not going to happen. We might get there through commercial pressures eventually, but that's not going to happen now. And we can't get all of the players involved and get them all to agree because everybody's got too many different interests. So the key to me on this is, for music publishing, for songwriters, for collection societies, we have a very specific issue which we need to resolve. And I think we really need to focus on that and put to one side other issues of licensing or any other activity. I also agree with Bendik that actually by having this, it allows societies to carry on with their commercial business of licensing. And in fact, it improves their ability to do it because some collection societies have, you know, only a few thousand songs on their database at the moment. Some collection societies don't even have a database. They still are working on Excel spreadsheets. So we, by creating this, we allow collection societies all over the world to operate from the same source of truth, the source of one truth, which deals specifically with songwriting ownership and publishing interests and society representation in every single country of the world.
Thank you very much, Jane. I would like that if Bendik could give us more details about the position of the authors on the database, on the global database. Bendik, specifically.
I think I already outlined those. We are very concerned about equal access. I'm thinking of DORAS, the societies in the developing world that are now using WIPOCOS. This has to be integrated with WIPOCOS in some way, so that the African repertoire and most a lot of the Latin American repertoire and the Asian repertoire actually has equal access and equal terms of competition that we now have for the Western repertoire. I think that's probably the main argument in terms of authors, that we see that this solidarity is very important in order to create a functioning, truly multi-territorial licensing scheme.
Muchas gracias.
Thank you very much, Bendik. I would like to open the floor on this issue, and we'd like to hear your very wise and good comments indicating your name and whom you're addressing the question to, so that our experts can give you an answer. You have the floor.
Mario Bouchard, Copyright Board, Canada. One thing that I've not heard addressed, and I want to raise it without any more detail, are the issues of privacy and confidentiality. The sharing of personal information concerning individual authors in some jurisdictions will be subject to privacy legislation and would have to be treated as such. And also, I doubt that many publishers would like other competing publishers have access to the information that their star composers contract with that publisher ends in 6 weeks, thereby opening the field to some form of raiding. And I just want to put that on the table without necessarily asking for any comments in particular.
Adelante, Jane.
Yes, you have the floor, Jane.
There has been a process of negotiation over many years, which has yet to reach a conclusion, whereby there is full access to data held on society databases for participating members of those societies. And so this is an issue which is being very hotly debated just in terms of having access to information on society databases. For the publishers, we're very happy to have access to that information. I mean, clearly there are certain bands of information that you're happy to make available, and on the very basic level, it would solve a huge amount of problems if you could say, this is the name of a song, this is who wrote it, That person wrote 28% of it. This person wrote 33% of it. This is the publisher who represents that person, and this is the publisher who represents that person, except in Chile, that person is represented by someone else. That's very basic information that should be available. It is not available at the moment, not even necessarily to the publisher who gave that information to a collection society. You give that information. That's where the ownership of the data becomes a really destructive factor in trying to work out what really is a question of common sense. And, you know, quite often in our world, common sense is something that falls by the wayside as we try and comply with different requirements, whether it's competition or data protection or what have you. But certainly, I don't want to necessarily make available the royalty rates that we've got on our system for our Eric Clapton agreement or our Madonna agreement. And I think that information, it may be that that information is held somewhere, but that information certainly, I don't think it's intended that that would be publicly available. So the question is, at what point you have publicly available information and at what point you don't.
Muchas gracias.
Thank you very much. Yes?
Yes, Nick Ashton Hart. I'm a local in Geneva advising high technology companies on IP and trade policy. I just want to follow up on one point that Jane made. I don't like disagreeing with Jane because she's a lovely person who I'm glad to call a friend, but I think that any global database of music rights cannot be primarily for any one classification of rights, because you cannot exploit a sound recording unless you can clear all the rights in the recording, both of the composer and of the performers and the phonogram producers. And secondarily, one of the key obstacles for internet services or any service that provides digital delivery of music is that there is a connection between every sound recording and the composition that the musicians are playing on that sound recording. And because of the origin of, because music was originally built around a world where you didn't need that connection, that is really a key thing that is lacking in terms of international infrastructure. And without that connection, you could not really automate much in terms of anything. If you have the information on the song and you have the information on the performers, unless they're joined up, you can't exploit any recording that you physically have. And so I think that's an incredibly important thing that I'm sure Jane is not meaning to suggest that the rights in the recording are the poor cousins of the authors. I know that she does not view that in this way. But I wanted to make sure that was clear to everyone, is that this was actually mentioned by Zahava Levine of Google earlier, that this key link is missing. And a global system that could integrate those two would be an enormous benefit to both, to all parties in music, really. It would greatly facilitate electronic commerce, even if it was not a licensing system, which I understand is really not necessary. The other thing that I would say is that any effort to build a global system must in some way be globally represented. And while I think WIPO is a great home because of its century of experience in managing international rights systems in other areas of copyright, of other areas of IP, any global system of this kind would need to have the buy-in of member states from all parties, including their stakeholders. And therefore, the processes of governance would be as important to making it work as how you define the data that the system holds.
Muchas gracias.
Thank you. Yes, please.
Ofir Gudazon from Pixcode Israel. I want to take aside the discussion a little bit just from music and talk generally about content and all. We heard a couple of people saying that, and I'm talking about what do I think WIPO can help with. We talked about people thinking about the platforms like the Googles, the Apples, and others as being the source of sharing the information and therefore in some way helping licensing, in most of ways helping infringement to happen or copyright infringement. And building those type of registries and building those type of infrastructure is good as long as maybe WIPO can take a position where enabling, where going to into the safe harbor definition will not be that easy, as long as there is such registries that will enable the platform to show the information about the content and to make life easier to those who want to license to be aware of copyright.
Muchas gracias.
Thank you. My colleague over there, you have the floor, sir.
I work for Korean Institute as the senior research fellow. First of all, I am very pleased to participate in a wonderful global meeting. As you said, I think both government and the WIPO's role is very important in facilitating access A2C or A2K, access to knowledge in the digital age. In relation to this topic, I have two simple questions. First one, if there are conflict between them, who controls this situation? And the second one, what portion on each role do you think is optimistic?
If I understand you right, when there is a dispute between a user and a rights holder, how will that be sorted out? I imagine WIPO has great experience with disputes procedures, and that I would think would be the answer. And your second question was?
Percentage of the WIPO's role or the government's role?
Well, I don't think the national governments have a role beyond the fact that there are existing national copyright laws and so forth. I don't imagine that the creation of the global repertoire database as a registry will involve the changing of copyright laws in sovereign states. I imagine that there will be some pressures on copyright which come from other. I mean, as Professor Liesig was pointing out, that there may be a need for an expansion of the copyright rights available to people, some rights which they may not wish to use, other rights which they wish to extend. and there may be a development whereby those people who administer and represent copyrights may no longer administer all the rights in a given work, but they may only administer, for instance, the online rights, and then they may only administer the broadcasting rights in a national territory rather than in a pan-universal. But I don't think that the creation of the global repertoire database or its administration, if it takes place, by WIPO, would involve any changing in national copyright laws of itself.
Muchas gracias.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Hardy, for his answer. I know that there are many questions in the pipeline still, and even on the hard disk of our computer, but we do have a remit to comply with. And I would like to thank the experts for their very brilliant participation in this panel. And I'd also like to congratulate you all for your very brilliant questions and comments. And I'd also like to thank you for your participation in this World Forum. Thank you.